From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Last night, Governor Patrick delivered his 7th State of the State address, which was an ambitious tax, education, and transportation proposal. Here with me in Studio 3 to go over the politics and policies of this address are GBH's Adam Riley and Kelly Bates, Executive Director of the Access Strategies Fund. Thanks, you two, for being here.
Hi, Kelly.
Good to be here.
And I definitely want to do both policy and politics. I'm going to start with you, Kelly Bates. So the governor is proposing a $1.9 billion tax increase to handle education and transportation. Is this good policy?
Well, I think it's a political strategy because he knows that it's going to be very difficult to gain the kind of consensus he wants around taxes. And the way he wants to do it is by saying we're going to earmark this money for two of my priorities, public education and transportation. The danger is there are so many unmet needs in the state. I mean, if you look at, he talked nothing about job creation. And if you think about services like domestic violence or our state's food assistance program, who's going to support those programs, which in a tight economy need resources? So I think it's a little bit of a dangerous proposition, but he's trying to get something passed. And his three key priorities have always been education, infrastructure, and what he calls innovation, and trying to bring in new, you know, economic growth through biotech, et cetera. So he's trying to finish that legacy. But I think it is going to be a major issue because elected officials either are going to be concerned about whether or not the public has the appetite for taxes. And then secondarily, what about all these other things which are very, very important and are on the minds of our voters?
Okay, so let's just talk about what he's proposing in terms of raising the taxes. He wants to raise the income tax to 6.25 from 5.25, which it is currently. So that works out to about 19% more in income taxes. So we should say that that means that people who make more will have to pay more in income tax. Then he wants to lower the sales tax, which, as you know, was a huge fight to get it to 6.25, which it is currently. He wants to lower it to 4.5. That's 28% less tax on each sale. I have to say, a little bit confused, Kelly, about how this is working out. I know you're not a tax person, but just, you know, in terms of where he's trying to go, and to your point about worthy programs that seem to have been cut back, how are we to look at this?
Well, I think that the sales tax proposal is the most interesting to me because he did fight so hard to increase the sales tax for specific other kinds of policy programs. First of all, he's reducing it, and then he's saying, now we're also going to put all this towards public transportation dollars. And sometimes when people earmark revenue, there's usually an association between the kind of tax and the kind of expense. And this is, we're not talking about like tolls on highways here to go toward public transportation. So it's sort of an odd equation in the first place. But also, you're reducing it, which is interesting in the first place. And then, again, you're putting it all towards one thing. And so I think it's kind of peculiar. Also, a lot of analysts and policymakers will tell you that the sales tax isn't where you're really going to raise a lot of your revenue. It's really about the income tax, which he's doing here. Mm. But he's only actually proposing a 1% increase, which, as far as the legislature is concerned in terms of negotiating, there's not a whole lot of room there to negotiate. And that's where you're going to really make up, you know, your revenues for your budget. So I think it's an interesting way to do tax policy. But again, to my point earlier, it's going to be challenging to find out, you know, find other sources of funding for these other programs. The other thing he didn't talk about as much that he's going to do is try to play with the corporate tax code so that there'll be less corporate deductions available for certain large companies and certain types of companies who won't be classified as being able to benefit as much under the tax code. He was quiet about that, and I find that very interesting. I don't think he wanted to put too much attention on that, but he was sort of warning individuals that this may be coming around your taxes. But I want to remind people, his proposal is about what he calls ability to pay. So he's sort of saying, if you make under like 37 grand, you're not going to see your taxes go up. They'll go down slightly. If you make above that, you will see an increase in your taxes. And the higher up in the income bracket that you are, the more they will go up.
And the disparity is actually pretty extreme, because if you look, According to data coming out of the administration, this was on the front of the Globe today. Again, administration numbers, but let's say that you make between, you know, about $21,000 and $37,000. Allegedly, between the sales tax reduction and the income tax increase, your net tax burden is going to actually drop about $100. But then suppose that you make more than $102,000, which, you know, a limited number of people do, but not that limited a number of people. Then your tax bill is supposed to go up in total $3,200, which is a big, big bump. So he's really pushing to make the tax system in Massachusetts much more progressive, and I use that not in a sort of a, I use it in a value neutral sense. He's looking to tax upper income people a lot more than they've been taxed up until now. I also think that politically speaking, the governor has said he's not running for re-election. You know, people talk about him maybe running for some other office down the road, president.
Well, you can only do this if you're not running for re-election.
Exactly. Yeah. And my hunch during the speech last night was that all the various Democrats who are interested in succeeding him were listening to these proposals and kind of muttering words under their breath that I don't want to mutter here on air. Because this is a natural thing for Charlie Baker or Scott Brown or any other Republican to go off on in the next gubernatorial campaign, saying, you know, they jacked up your taxes $2 billion. You know, Governor Patrick jacked up your taxes $2 billion on the way out. We'll provide relief. And I think the person that hurts most, you know, and he's had other political issues, but Tim Murray is part of the administration. So he owns this in a way that the other Democratic hopefuls will not.
This is Adam Riley from WGBH, a political reporter on Greater Boston. And let me just follow up with you just a bit, Adam. To your point, Senate President Therese Murray, who is a Democrat, the quote here from the Herald is, he threw long and maybe we'll meet him somewhere down the road, but we don't know yet. That's hardly an endorsement. And then House Speaker Robert DeLeo says, we have to hear from the business community, back to what you said, Kelly, and our own constituents as to what this means to them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's smart politics. Yeah. I actually think the Senate president and the House speaker know more than they're letting on about how far they're willing to go. But they are protecting their chambers because they want to be able to say, we're going to debate this. We want to hear from our members. And so they're buying time before they push hard for this. But I would guess that they are somewhere on board to at least the notion that taxes have to increase. And they've been preparing for this for a while. My understanding is that the leadership has been knowing at some point we're going to have to do this. We can't keep going this way with our economy without raising taxes. The question was sort of when and how. And now that, you know, the governor's been reelected, it's not an election year for most state legislators, they are more likely to start pushing this through. But they're still going to say the jury's still out and, you know, we have two bodies of the legislature and let's see what they say.
There's a policy point I actually want to make, which I came to this fairly late, and I'm not sure that it's out there, to be honest. I'm not sure how many people who've been commenting on the governor's plans get this. We've heard for years and years and years about, it's always described as the T's crippling debt, you know, billions and billions of dollars. I think it made, what, $8 billion, something like that. Oddly enough, this massive new transportation plan the governor is pitching, which he is describing as sort of a cure for everything that ails the state's transportation systems, it doesn't pay down the T's debt. I heard that. I got confirmation on that from the Mass Department of Transportation last night. And honestly, I think a lot of people, a lot of pundits, commentators don't get this. And it's very,
I didn't get that.
It's very odd because we're talking, the governor's talking about the need to buy, you know, we're going to buy new subway cars for 3 of the 4 lines. We're going to build a new commuter rail line to the South Shore. We're going to, you know, build out South Station, high-speed rail linking Pittsfield to New York City. But we're not taking care of this debt, which has been cited for years and years and years as the lodestone around the T's neck and the cause of all its problems. And I think,
let me just be clear about this. So the proposed green tax on cars that pollute more, the electronic tolling, the expansion here and there, that all of that raises $1 billion or something, as I'm understanding, that doesn't pay down the debt?
My understanding, and Kelly, you can tell me if I'm getting this right, is that some of that $1 billion a year that the governor's looking for in new transportation-focused revenue, some of it will be used to fund operational costs at the T and other places, and some of it will be used to help the T with its debt service, in other words, the interest payments on its debt. But the principle itself, is going to be still sitting there. And I think, you know, there may be a point several years down the road at which it's slated to come down a little bit, but again, just intuitively, you would think, all right, this plan is huge. It's supposed to do all this stuff. Mm. Obviously, it's going to fix the T debt, and it's not.
Right, which then is going to raise critical questions again about, are there fare increases? Yeah. And if anybody's rode the commuter rail lately, It's so expensive. There's a new commuter rail line now that's also going through the Reedville Hyde Park area in Boston and other places around the state. How are, you know, the users going to be able to afford this if something like this isn't going to pay for it?
We are talking about Governor Deval Patrick's 7th State of the State address, which he delivered last night, emphasis on taxes, with a focus on using those taxes to pay for education and transportation. Adam Riley, Greater Boston's Adam Riley, political reporter, has just shocked us with the news that the increase in proposed taxes does not lower the debt that the T is currently carrying. I'm surprised by that. Kelly Bates has pointed out that there are policy issues and concerns that the governor has been somewhat quiet about, particularly those that may impact corporate entities. And asked the question, Kelly Bates, what do we do with those worthy programs that certainly I've sat here and discussed over many, many months that have been cut back now to the bone and are trying to continue forward? And yet this proposal, with as much of raising of taxes as it does not address what happens to those programs. Adam Riley.
This seems like a good time to make a point that I've actually been fascinated with. The governor is a fantastic orator. I mean, I think he's an incredible speaker, extremely compelling in the way he lays out his vision. But he also has a tendency, and I think we saw it last night, to cast his policy proposals in moral terms. Nothing wrong with that. Again, it's good rhetoric. But also to sort of imply that if you question the ambition of his proposals, that you are almost acting in bad faith, that if you don't buy his priorities, that you are excessively self-absorbed or you're not concerned about the needs of your fellow citizens. And this is something that, you know, we heard it when the Transportation Department rolled out their plan earlier this week, and we heard it again last night. I think that that deserves a little pushback, because as we've been talking about here, there are reasons to question, for policy reasons, the merits of what he's proposing. And if you do, it doesn't mean, contrary to what the governor suggested last night, that you think some fourth graders deserve more opportunities than others, or that you don't think economic opportunity should be spread equally around the state. But he frames it in a way that that's kind of the implication. And I just think he deserves to be gently called on.
Let's quote the governor directly. This is from his speech last night. He says, "Opportunity is too important to leave to chance. Opportunity requires growth, and growth requires investment. It's just as true of government as it is in any business. The economy is not like the weather. It is not some natural force that is beyond our control, something where we have to wait for others to predict or explain. What we choose to do and not to do shapes our future. Indeed, as a friend of mine likes to say, the future belongs to those who prepare for it. That is why we invest in education, in innovation, and in infrastructure."
Well, you know, this is so much a part of the talking points of the Democratic Party right now, which is, how do we justify to the American public the kinds of investments that we want to make? And to finance that, you know, raise taxes or find revenues. And part of their talking points are to talk about the role of government. And it always comes up. This is a classic debate in our American culture about what the role of government is. And he's trying to say, you know, government has a role to play. It's not the only party that plays a role. The private sector does, too. And we need to focus on growth. And to do that, we have to invest. And the government plays a role in that. And here's how we can do it. And so he's trying to bring people along to the argument that there is a role to play, because he knows that people are going to come back and say, listen, I'm struggling. I don't really want to pay another dollar. Some people will say that. Or, you know, I just don't think it's the role of this government to do this at this time. And so he knows, he's foreshadowing what kind of debate we're going to have. But the whole party is sending talking points around this.
And I think he delivers them as well or better than any other nationally prominent Democrat I can think of. There was a point yesterday in the speech where he kind of preemptively took aim at the critique that you just mentioned, Kelly, saying, you know, government doesn't create jobs. The private sector does. And then he went on to say, but here's the things that government can do to help bolster economic opportunity on a wide scale. I think there are a lot of Democrats who wouldn't be that emphatic in saying government doesn't create jobs, because, in fact, government can create jobs. And, in fact, the Department of Transportation is touting job creation as it plugs all these, you know, this ambitious plan that the governor and the administration rolled out this
week.
And
we just heard the numbers that the extent of jobs in transportation went down in this last month, whereas some other kinds of jobs went up in the Commonwealth. So I agree with you. I think that was sort of, I was surprised that he said that, because government actually does play a role in job creation, which was not a big focus of his talk, which I think is so interesting. But I want to talk about the public education focus, though, because I do think this is really, really interesting. I mean, if you poll and you talk to voters, they are very, very interested in what we can do about public education. And he knows that if he want, that's his legacy. I think he feels really strongly about what he can accomplish on his watch around that. And there is some unfinished business around that. So he talked about focusing on early education. He was not clear about what he meant by that, by the way. But there's been some emphasis in the school systems around the state to make sure that students and kids get into the schools earlier when they're younger, and you can shape their ability to read earlier and to socialize earlier. He talked about having longer school days, which is interesting, and wanting to expand that. Some schools are doing that, but certainly most of them are not. He talked about the importance of trying to add back in arts and exercise and music, which I know is a big issue for a lot of schools. And then lastly, he talked about, this was good for some of our students in the system, really adding money to the Mass Grants program, which provides scholarships to needy students who are residents here and are going to institutions around the state. So That was very significant, I think. But at the same time, there's still a lot of details that we need to understand about what he actually means around, you know, financing public education. He also knows, folks may remember that we got money through Race to the Top funds,
That's
which
right.
came from the federal government, significant dollars to turn around some of our schools in Boston and other places. That money, it's unclear if it's going to be there at all. Some are saying it's not. And he knows he's got to make up some of the dollars so that he can keep improving the schools in the way that, in the ways that he wants to. And he touts our schools. He says, you know, we're doing really well in math and science compared to the rest of the world. But we still have an academic achievement gap that persists. And what he's referring to is the disparities between low-income children and higher-income children and kids of color and white kids. And there are still very big disparities.
The numbers he cited last night were really striking. I can't remember exactly, but, you know, less than 40%, I think, of African-American and Latino third graders, I believe, have basic reading comprehension skills or the skills they're supposed to have, which, you know, those aren't great numbers.
He started, to your point about his emphasis on education, he started his speech with a visit, one of his visits to Orchard Park.
Orchard Gardens,
and how much he appreciates that and what he gets from that and what he sees there in terms of what they've been able to achieve and wants that for everybody else. So here's the question. Kelly Bates, Executive Director of the Access Strategies Fund, is with me, as is GBH's Adam Riley of Greater Boston. How do you get people at a time of, you know, economic recovery, not recovered, and others who are not in the programs that he's targeted, to hear your message about investment? Because I don't think we, any of us, want to pay another tax. However, there comes a time where if you don't address certain things that are huge, the education piece is huge, and certainly our transportation is messed up. Now, I'm not saying he gets everything he wants or should, but at some point, some investment has to go into some of this so that there is a future that makes sense for all of us. How do you do that, Adam Riley?
It's a great question. I think that the timing for him is not great because we've had, you know, in the wake of the fiscal cliff showdown between President Obama and Congress, people are going to be seeing their payroll taxes go up, which, you know, that's a hit every month, a substantial hit that a lot of us I think all of us virtually are going to be taking. I think that you do it, and I touched on this earlier in a somewhat critical way, I think you do it by framing investment as a moral matter or an ethical choice and saying, you know, if you're thinking big picture and pardon me, and if you're genuinely concerned about the future of this state and the future of your fellow citizens of the Commonwealth, this is something you have to do. The timing isn't great. It may be uncomfortable, but it's necessary and it's the right thing to do. I think you argue that way. And I think you even shame people a little bit. And I think that's the strategy he's using. And I think he's very good at it.
Yeah, I think the message of small pain, but great gain, you know, and how we're investing for the future, which he did hit the investment message really well. And I think saying, you know, this we could come up with something much more massive than this, but we're not. This is incremental. This is small, you know, steps that we want to take that we think everyone can handle. And look, we're going to spread it across everybody. And for those who can pay, we're going to give it to them even more because they can handle it. And we're going to have a real debate about this. That's what he said last night, which I think was very, very smart. I also think there's going to be a ton of grassroots energy around this. There are many community groups that we fund and that we know about who are going to fight for this. They want to see more revenue coming in. And also, we're going to see people on the other side as well. But I think there's going to be a lot of community input into this.
Another thing you do politically to make it fly is, and this, I see this less with education. I mean, a lot of this stuff applies to, people around the state just as a matter of course in education. But in transportation, you do it politically by proposing projects that run they run through the entire state, right? So there's something for people in Western Mass, Central Mass, Eastern Mass. And I actually had someone from the governor's administration say to me after the rollout of this plan earlier in the week that is a political reality, that something that was just Boston focused wouldn't work because the legislature is not just Boston. So that's one reason for the ambition and, the $13 billion price tag that accompanies it. One last thing I really want to mention is another reason for skepticism about the transportation plan in particular is the memory of the Big Dig, which is still pretty fresh.
Yeah.
And we were talking to people on the street in Boston yesterday for their take on the governor's proposals. And a couple people said very eloquently, the Big Dig was supposed to cost a certain amount of money at the beginning. And then by the end, it ended up costing a whole lot more than that. How do we know that the same thing isn't going to happen here? How do we know that $13 billion isn't going to become $26
billion? Well, you could
answer
that by saying if it had gone ahead when it was supposed to, when the investment was originally called for, which may be where we are now.
That is one possible answer, yeah.
Then it wouldn't have gotten to the point where it doubled and tripled and whatever as it went along.
True, true.
But then you think about, less possibility of that.
Price tag for a South Station expansion. Okay, now it's X number, million dollars.
I know, but if you don't act, how do you it just gets worse as you go along. I would just say this, and I'm not a politician and not a pundit as you were,
well, you're
Adam.
A pundit.
And
R.
Kelly, I'm not doing the strategy. But for we, the little people who will be asked to pay these taxes, I want to see something changing fairly quickly. I need a little instant gratification. So if you're asking, I'm serious. I'm speaking for the taxpayers now. If you're asking me for more taxes, if you've decided you're taking it, my opinion, then I want to see one of these projects in action that I can see, hey, it's really working. So I don't need to go to the red line and wait.
You want them shovel ready, as they like
exactly.
to say, right?
You want that sign that said paid for by my tax dollars right,
and
right in your neighborhood.
And I'm using it right now. I'm not using it in 2020. That's all I got to say. Maybe some legislators hearing me and can feel that. So that's all. Thank you so much to the two of you for your very insightful commentary. We've been talking about Governor Patrick's State of the State Address with GBH's Adam Riley, political reporter, and Kelly Bates, Executive Director of the Access Strategies Fund. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
From Texas and the governor's State of the State Address to Wall Street, Kara Miller.
Hey, Kelly. So it's interesting. Part of the problem that the state is having is due to the whole financial collapse and the collapse of Wall Street. And some people think that is because the geeks descended on Wall Street, the physicists, the mathematicians. I'm going to talk to a physicist about that and the question of, where is Wall Street headed in this new sort of techie era? I'm Kara Miller.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Boston Public Radio.